poems. I'm not a poet of any sort, and I haven't studied poetry, but I've studied Dharma a little bit, so when I read this Dharma poetry, I get some meanings. Perhaps not the full meaning, but I get enough, I hope. And so what happens is poetry is condensed words and condensed descriptions and symbolisms to help express something deeper. So without being descriptive, poems can be very short, but describe something very deep and very profound. So someone who can write poems is quite artistic and quite intelligent, and also is able to convey something to us cryptically, yet clearly. So sometimes for some of us who read these cryptic type of messages, to us it remains cryptic and ununderstood or not much meaning. But for some of us, it hits it very deep, and it's easy to remember because it's put in such a way that it's so beautiful. The prose and the explanation and the words and the symbolism and the idea is so beautiful that it's very easy to remember. So therefore, Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche, from what I read, is not only a master poet, also his knowledge of the Dharma is profound, because he has used the ancient art of poems to express the ancient thought of Lord Buddha, but in very modern terms, something that's extremely applicable to all of us who are not in Tibet. Okay, so what happens is that his regent, he manifested unhappiness with his regent, and his regent was very, very arrogant and very, very not nice to people, so it's said. And so Rinpoche wanted to convey something to him very strongly, and Rinpoche took the opportunity to actually use this incident to teach many other students who might have the same problem or affliction. So out of great compassion, Rinpoche patiently trained and groomed and tried to help his regent, but it didn't turn out the way it was supposed to. So Rinpoche had to manifest some wrath and show some ferocity in order to put a stop to something that was very bad. We believe in Tibetan system, the highly accomplished tantric masters, highly accomplished, not just anybody, not any Joe Schmuck, highly accomplished tantric masters, when you trust them and believe in them very much, and you have this open mind about them that you just accept from observation, when they show wrathful action towards you, it purifies tremendous karma. It's better than pujas. It's much, much better than pujas. So what happens is, if we don't cultivate that type of mind, and we choose to hold on to our fears and ego and arrogance, then most of the time the Lama will not show that type of action toward us. Not that the Lama is afraid, but you yourself do not allow change. So therefore, when the Lama show wrath in Tibet, highly accomplished Lama, not just anybody, is a very, very powerful way to remove the obstacles, remove the problems from us. Hence you have wrathful deities, wrathful energies. So what happens is Chögyam Trungpa manifested a lot of wrath, and I think that if the regent had taken his cue and transformed himself and changed himself, I think his destiny or his end would have been quite different, a different type of ending. So what happened was, also in some cases, it is believed in our Tibetan tradition that if something is going to happen to us that's very negative, the Lama, who's very kind, will do everything he can to avert it. And for him to avert it, he will use methods and apply methods to us that we have to be open to. If we are not open to it and we're always closed and we always have this mind, my Lama can only talk to me a certain way, act with me a certain way, and behave with me a certain way, and therefore I will accept it, then the Lama will do that. The Lama, you have limited his benefit to you. Why? It's like you want vitamin D from the sun, so you need to put yourself in the sun 15 minutes a day. But if you put yourself in a container that's closed and only has one hole and a little bit of sunlight coming in, you won't get much vitamin D happening over there. So what I mean is, if you restrict the sun's rays, it's very difficult for the sun to help you. So if we have an attitude now that my Lama can only talk to me this way, or act with me this way, or say this to me, or do this to me, and if he does any other way, I will run, I will not cooperate, I will not listen, I will not do, then hence the problems we have now. Why? Because in the past we didn't allow our Lama to do anything for us on a higher level. nothing. So hence we have the problems now. Hence we have problems now, we have problems in the future. So what happens is it, oh, so what am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to submit to the Lama and therefore I won't have any problems? No. If you have the fortune to be around the Lama, that's one method open to you to eliminate your problems and your negative karma. It's open to you. It's just like a person who studies with the Lama or studies from a book far away. It's an option open to you. So if you have that option, it's to many collected merits. So therefore, what we should do is we should take advantage. Why is it that we think about it? Why is it? The little bit of advice that we have listened to from our Lama, the little bit of advice, for many of us, we have gained tremendous benefits. We have told people, oh, I should have listened to my Lama earlier. I should have listened to Rinpoche earlier. I should have listened to Geshe-la earlier. I should have listened to Lama earlier. I should have listened and then I got this benefit now. So if the few times you've listened to your Lama and you've got this benefit, why don't you listen to your Lama all the time? So if we listened to our Lama in the past and gotten some benefit, some more harmony in our lives, some more acceptance of our problems, overcoming difficulties, maybe overcoming people that we hate, or letting go of some anger, or doing some purification practice, or even averting some disasters for some of us, because we listened to the Lama. Imagine if we totally listened to our Lama all the way. So even if our Lama has proven himself or herself to us in the past, we still have this mind that restricts his help to us now. So we put our Lamas in a box. So every single person in this room put the Lama in a box of how the Lama can talk, act, move, function, then the Lama cannot move at all. Because everybody's version of how a spiritual teacher should and should not do is going to be very different. So what happens is before you even get anything, you have restricted your Lama's spiritual benefit to you. By what? Your preconceived ideas. So your preconceived ideas of what a Lama can do and cannot do is a very big hamper, especially for students who have already taken refuge. And hence you have questions out there like, why does Rinpoche have hair? It shows you the level of their mind and how it operates. Very, very base. Very, very base. So my point is what is? If we have listened to our Lamas in the past and we have gotten some benefit, imagine if we had listened to our Lamas all the way. It would have been quite different already now. And in the past, if we have not listened to our Lamas all the way, that's after check. I'm not talking about new people who just walk in and say, hey, Rinpoche, I'm going to listen to everything you say. No, no, no. I'm talking about people who's been around for years. Years. New people, they need to check. They need to check, they need to look, they need to observe. That's definitely accepted. Definitely. So my point is for people who's been around. Some people can be new, they trust the Lama instantly. Why? For many lifetimes of having a connection with the Lama. They have a karmic connection very strong. They've met the Lama in a previous life. They've done work with the Lama, they've studied under the Lama, or they've supported the Lama, or helped the Lama in the previous life. So in this life, they have this kind of ingrown faith in the Lama. That doesn't mean that they don't have their doubts, they have their ups and downs, but basically, more of them will support and help and do things for the Lama than more of them inside of them will not. Why? It's karmic past connection. So for some new people, instantly upon faith. In my case, when I met Sarangji the first time, I instantly accepted whatever Rinpoche said, upon sight. From that day until now, I have no doubts about Sarangji. It's been 20 years. So for me, I've experienced that. I've experienced it. It's not fanaticism. I was in America. I was just a kid growing up. But when I met Rinpoche, instantly I knew. What did I know? I know that this person is my guru. I will study with him. And I will be loyal and follow my guru for the rest of my life. And whatever practices my guru give me, that's it. And I've heard rumors about Rinpoche in the past, just like everywhere, people saying negative things, this and this. Doesn't affect me at all. Why doesn't it affect me at all? I saw Rinpoche with my own eyes, with my own ears, and with my own mind. And I'm more smarter than them. I believe I'm more smarter. Why? 20 years later, 10 years later, I have more results than these people. It may sound like arrogance, but this is what I use. I know more than them because I've studied more than them. So these people will criticize my Lama or say bad things about them. They haven't studied. They're not monks. They're lay people. They don't know anything. So when they say this, I know more. So I don't listen. Why don't I listen? I know more. It's like a med student criticizing a doctor that's been in practice for 20 years. You don't have to listen. So what happens is this is, if our Lama has benefited us and have given us advice and even given other people advice, and we can see a benefit and help them, if we had listened to our Lama's advice from the beginning, many things would have been different. Many, many things would have been different. Why? The Lama will give us advice in reference to past, present, and our future. The Lama will give us advice based on how we are presently, as a result of our past, meaning due to our past, we have ended up like so. And the Lama will give us advice to help us for the present, which will affect our future tremendously. Any real Lama, Lama just is a Tibetan word for teacher, Dharma teacher. Any real Lama, listen very carefully, ladies and gentlemen. Any real Lama will not be so concerned about your life now. Any real Lama will be concerned about your death, how you die, and where you take rebirth, because your rebirths in the future will be much more than this life. Any real Lama that only concentrates on you having a good life now and happy now and things now, they perhaps don't know about the Dharma in depth. Any real Lama will be looking at this picture, not this picture. And any practices they give you may look like it's a temporary remedy for something now, but actually it's to help you long term. Any Lama will, inverted commas, trick you into a practice that you think helps you now, but actually takes you into the future. So you may meet a Lama who gives you a tsatsa. You may meet a Lama that gives you a tsatsa, Lama Tsongkhapa. Maybe gives you a tsatsa of, etc. This is to give you a signal of what you should do, is to open up something in you. Maybe the Lama hasn't even met you and give you a gift. When the Lama hasn't even met you and give you a gift, the reason the Lama gives you a gift is to hook you in to spiritual practice and to do Dharma practice so you can be happier and transform your mind. The Lama gives gifts for no other reason but to bring some blessing into your life. Even the objects you use when the Lama has given you, be rest assured that the Lama has chanted, done prayers, and done mantras, and blown on the object and given to you. Why? So that when you touch the object, when you pray, when you use it, it blesses you. How does it bless you? To open up something in you to go deeper with your life. So if a Lama gives you a gift, A, he has to get the sponsorship for it. Lamas don't have money. B, he has to go and buy it and prepare it. C, when he knows about you, he'll actually think very carefully what to give you and to affect you. And when he gives it to you, he actually does prayers. Real Lamas will do prayers and do mantras, sometimes for days, and blow on the object or touch the object and send the energy over. So that when you touch the object, when you receive the object, when you get the object, it will be more than just, oh, I got a gift. Wow, I got a gift. I'm so wonderful. You're like some kind of pageant queen that got your flowers because you won the pageant. But it will be much more. What is that? When you touch it and see it and use it, it will open up something inside of you. There's no other reason any Lama will give gifts. No other reason. So therefore, when they do this kind of prayer, they do this kind of motivation, they give it to you. When you touch it, when you use it, it might open up something in this life now. It might open up something a few years later. It might open up something in your future life. Whatever it is, depending on your karma, it is to benefit you. Definitely is to benefit you. So therefore, my point is what? If one has a Lama, one has investigated and checked, and one has confidence and taken refuge and believe, go all the way. Don't do 50-50. You don't go into marriage 50-50. You don't go into business 50-50. You don't eat something 50-50. You go all the way with it. Go all the way. Go all the way and make it work. Even some of us go into marriage or business or whatever and it gets rocky, we push ourselves and make it smooth. Human determination. So if we can make things smooth for normal things, we should make things smooth for our spiritual practice. And very important to have a Lama, very important to have a teacher. Why is that? It will give you direct experience, direct explanation of experience. Direct. It is more than just study. And if we're very fortunate, if we develop, listen very carefully, if we develop a relationship with our Lama, with our teacher that we have met, over time you will see the benefit of what he does for you over time. Overnight, very hard. Over time. Whatever practices the Lama gives you, do it all the way. Whatever meditations or prayers or chanting or deities that the Lama gives you, do it all the way. All the way. And then what the Lama wants you to practice. You don't need to listen to people. You don't need to listen to rumors. You don't need to listen to hearsay. What the Lama wants you to practice, look inside the Dharma Center. Look, whatever is in the Dharma Center is an indication of what the Lama wants you to practice and what path is for you. Very clear. So whatever objects you see in the center, is one is definitely correct for you. Very simple. So whatever the Lama puts in there, that is the plans he has for you. Doesn't mean it's the only plans. So it's very, very important. Now, when we look at something, and we look at it incorrectly, and we act upon that incorrect perception, acting from the incorrect perception brings us untold, unknown, unasked for problems and difficulties. And when we act from incorrect perception, it not only brings more problems for us and difficulties, also, this is the scary part, it adds to our neurosis. What is neurosis? Fear, prejudice, wrong view, phobias about something that is unfounded. So when we act from wrong perception, it will increase our neurosis. And the neurosis will... Example. If we have very little self-esteem for ourselves, it can come out in many ways. It could come out that we dress and act and do things in such a way that offends people. So when it offends people, we get their attention. And when they look at us and they give us their attention, we feel we're worth something. And so for the moment they look at us and we get some attention, we feel we're worth something, but ultimately it adds to our neurosis because after a while we're going to have to increase the volume. We're going to have to do more. We're going to have to be more offensive. We're going to have to be more loud. We have to be more rude in order to get more attention. So what happens is for the moment we get what we want, inverted commas, attention. People look at us. People notice us. But ultimately what happens is we alienate everyone. People stay away. And people don't like us anymore. And we cry. And we're lonely. And we shout and we scream. And we ask why. So when it adds to the neurosis, that's the dangerous part. Highly realized lamas. And lamas, not just from Tibet, my friends. When I say highly realized lama, please do not think I am isolating. Only in Tibet we have advanced spiritual practitioners. False. Let me just use that as an example since I'm from there. Highly advanced lamas, when they act out of so-called anger or sadness or games or teasing or playing, they do not increase their neurosis. Why? Because they're not acting out of self-gratification. So when they're angry and screaming at you, they don't add to their neurosis. They don't collect negative karma. Why? Because they're not screaming at you to get gratification that they won, that they stepped on you, that they're right, that you're wrong, that see, ha ha. But they're actually yelling and screaming at you because you pushed them to the point where there's no other method. So in that way, highly attained lamas, how are highly attained lamas highly attained? Listen carefully. They think more about you and others than themselves. And that habit is natural. That's what we call highly attained. We're not talking about flying in the sky or healing people by blowing or glowing in the dark. We're not talking about that. Highly attained beings think about others more than themselves, and it's reflected by their action. Everything that they do is dedicated for others since a very young age. Everything. So they can take robes, they can become monks, they can become nuns, they can be aspirants, they can become meditators, hermits, healers, whatever. Everything they do is for others. They don't hide behind wealth. They don't collect wealth for themselves. They have no wealth, basically. They have no wealth. They have no family. They have no reputation. They have very little possessions. Why? Because they have not spent their life looking for that or aspiring towards that. That's how you can tell a spiritual person. Why? They're focused on others, life after life. Yeah, whatever they need, they will get. Whatever they want, they will get. They will be taken care of spontaneously from their karma, from the karma of giving. So what happens is, highly attained lamas, when they play jokes, when they scream, when they shout, when they talk, when they act funny, it doesn't increase their neurosis at all. Why? Because they have never acted out of self-gratification. Normal people like you and me, when we act out of these negative emotions, we increase our neurosis. Why? Why do we increase it? Each time we do it, we get a slight gratification, so we want more. Human nature or samsara nature is, I want more of what I've gotten. So when we want more, the neurosis increases. So when the neurosis increases, the manifestation of the neurosis must also increase. When the manifestation of the neurosis must increase, then whatever we do must be, the volume must be turned on. So we become more rude, we become more loud, we get into habituation. And when all these habituations become stronger and louder and bigger, it's very difficult to cut. That's why we take vows. We take vows, it's on two levels. One is to collect the merit to cut the neurosis, because we're taking vows in reference to the three jewels. They have power. We're not swearing to the universe. We're not swearing to just a chair or a friend. We're swearing to a Buddha. A Buddha has the power for us to collect the merits and the affinity to cut off our neurosis. So when we take vows and say, I will not kill from today on, I will not lie, I will not steal, I will not cheat. If we take those vows and then we don't do it, every day we don't do it, we collect the merit of not doing that, and that has results. Simply not doing it has no karma. Why? A baby doesn't kill and lie, but the baby doesn't collect good karma. The baby's not a saint. It doesn't do it because it can't. It cannot. So not doing it or refraining is not spiritual practice. It's not spiritual practice. So what happens is that when we do actions that create this gratification, it adds to our neurosis. And why do we do actions that create more or add to our neurosis? Why? Because we view things incorrectly. Why do we view things incorrectly? Lack of spiritual knowledge, lack of spiritual education, lack of spiritual intellectual knowledge. Lack of knowledge leads to wrong action or afflicted actions. Afflicted actions is an action that we don't want it to be wrong, but it's inherently afflicted. It's wrong. So what happens is, for example, people who talk a lot, I've come across many times, people who talk a lot and talk nonstop and incessantly, or need to be heard, or without much sense, or that just drives you nuts, they're people that have experienced a lot of neurosis of not getting any type of respect. That people don't respect them, that people have not seen any value or worth in them, that people have not complimented them or told them that they're good. So they need to be heard. They need to repeat, and they need to talk, and they need to talk in such a way that your attention is never diverted away from them. So this neurosis becomes stronger. Why? Over the years, it develops into something that it becomes habitual. Even they want to control their speech, they're not able to control their speech, not because they're bad, because they've already gone into this mode that, please give me attention, please give me value, please give me worth, please tell me I'm good. So for what happens with these people, we have to be firm and very nice, but kind. We need to listen to them sometimes, and sometimes we need to tell them, hey, just get to the point and say what you feel. But give them their worth, compliment, and tell them what they need. Help them. And then, on top of that, teach them the Dharma. Explain to them where neurosis arises from. Why? They're highly intelligent people, usually. Usually. So how do we slap them down? We don't slap them down. We understand. So when we listen to the Dharma, we understand where this neurosis arises from. It's easier to give a remedy. So like that, wrong perception. Example, if my wife depends on me, and my kids depend on me, and I've got a lot of bills to pay, and if I just cheat the company this one time, it's not very bad. Anyway, they're very rich. Anyway, they're doing very well, and it's not a big deal. And if I just cheat them once, I'll be all right, and then I can do good things. I can even donate to the center. I can even help for my Dharma center. So I think I'm going to do this. That's wrong view. Why? Why is it wrong view? Because If you cheat the company, you'll get money, you'll feed your family, you'll take care of them, but the karma that you receive will be very, very heavy. Why is it very heavy? Two types of karma. One is stealing, one is deception. So in the future, no matter how much money or whatever you accumulate, you will either live with money with the fear of it being gone, and not the money will not be a cause of you having peace and happiness, but the money will be a cause of you to have even more anxiety, fears, and a lot of sadness. Why? Because the cause of the money was not virtuous. Since the cause of the money was not virtuous, the money cannot be virtuous. The money cannot result in virtuous activity or for us, ourselves and others. Some families become very wealthy. When they pass it to the kids, it goes down. Even Chinese have a saying, only three generations. But in general, my point is what? Is if it's accumulated the wrong way and it's unpurified, no matter how good it looks, no matter how wonderful it looks, the result will be negative somehow. If our children suffer, we suffer more than them because we observe it. We observe it. So you say, well, nothing happened to me. I'm healthy. I'm all right. Everything. But what about your kids? What about your relatives? Maybe your family. Maybe when you die. I've done many funerals. I've seen how some people have died. Their facial expressions is not very pretty. You don't talk to me about spiritualism and practice and prayer and Buddha and God. Don't talk to me about that. At the moment of death, the truth comes. How you lived your life. Why is that important? Because that will be the portal for you to take your rebirth. That will be the portal. The opening. So therefore, what happens is, from wrong view, we do wrong action. From wrong action, we collect even more negative karma. This negative karma, this wrong act, the negative karma brings more problems. The wrong view and acting it out adds to the neurosis. The neurosis becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. So this whole thing, looking at something wrongly, acting from wrong perception, and experiencing the karma and acting from that karma again, this whole thing, Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche was saying no to. The big no. Why is the no big? No is a negative connotation for saying don't, stop, negate, cut it. So the big no is for what? There are small no's. There are small no's. Small no's are don't kill, don't lie, don't steal. Those are small no's. Why are they small no's? Because those no's are small because they're symptoms of the big no. Listen carefully. The small no's are just symptoms of the bigger no. Why? The small no's are acting of and from neurosis. The big no is wrong view, wrong perception. So when we have wrong perception, that's the big no. Why? If we stop the big no, all the small no's automatically stop. So therefore, catch 22. If we cannot stop the big no's, the small no's continue. If we keep doing the small no's, the big no is alive and well. So it's catch 22. So what happens is we need to, instead of going to the big no immediately, we go to the small no. We go to the small no, meaning we stop the actions or eliminate the actions that feed the big no. What's the big no? Wrong perception. Ego. So when we stop the small no's, it's like this. It's like you have a lake and many rivers and tributaries going into the lake feeding it. If you stop all that, the lake has to dry up. Evaporation, the animals using it, it sinks into the ground, all that stuff. It'll eventually have to dry up. No rain, no tributaries, nothing. It has to dry up. Like that, the big no is like the lake. What is the lake? Ego, me, wrong perception. So the small no's are the lakes and the rains that refill this lake and keep it at its brim. So what is that? Therefore, Rinpoche took this opportunity, how to know the no. No is something to understand or to perceive. And then the no after that, N-O, is what we shouldn't do. How to know the no? There was a giant no. That no reigned. That no created a tremendous blizzard. That no made a dent on the coffee table. That no was the greatest no of no's in the universe. That no showered in hail. That no created sunshine and simultaneous eclipse of the sun and the moon. So that's so incredible because it's saying what? That was a giant no. Giant means what? The biggest no. So he's dealing with the biggest no. His opening to his prose, his opening to his poem is, he's telling you, what is the big no? There was a giant no. So from that opening statement, he goes to explain. That no rained. It rained why? On a symbolic level, he shouted it. He made sure you heard it. It was like a rain. When you're in a rain, that's it. You get wet. It's everywhere. So it's symbolic to a rain where it's very strong. That no created a tremendous blizzard. What happens during a blizzard, my friend? What happens? A blizzard is something that is so strong you can't see past your nose. You get lost. Cars have accidents. You go off the mountain. You go off the path. So a blizzard is something that obstructs your view of your path. So that no created a tremendous blizzard. Why? Because in this case, when someone tells you no, you're acting from wrong perception, you get lost. You say, but I'm a good person. I'm a wonderful person. I pray. I meditated. I donated. I had a good family. I took care of my kids. Why are these bad things happening to me? So you become confused. Why do you become confused? Because you are told the truth. So that truth, because you have not heard it, creates a temporary or a tremendous blizzard. And in the case of his regent, Tenzin Ōsel, it was a blizzard because Tenzin Ōsel was sitting high and mighty for a while and saying, you know, I'm somebody, I'm the greatest, and you have to listen to me and serve me. He even built a house bigger than for himself than his guru. So it created a blizzard. Why? Suddenly he became lost. He couldn't act out his arrogance anymore. He couldn't act out his big ego anymore. So on the level for his students, it creates a blizzard. For us, it creates a blizzard. Why? We go, oh, you mean I've been acting wrong all this time? This confusion is likened symbolically to a blizzard. Why is it a blizzard? Because it makes us and stops us to think for a minute. Keeps us in our tracks. Very profound. Then, almost zen-like. Then, that no made a dent on the coffee table. Immediately he brings it down to our ordinary level. That no made a no that made a dent on our coffee table. That dent was so strong because why? That dent is opposite of what a compassionate, loving, enlightened high lama would ever act out. We can never visualize a high, compassionate lama being so violent and making a dent on the coffee table. And it's so strong, it's like, wow, it's such a powerful statement. It blows our mind away. Why? Lamas and teachers shouldn't act like that. So that dent reminds you. Why is he acting that way? Because the actions of Tenzin Ōsel and the people who act like that out of wrong view will experience tremendous sufferings. So Rinpoche wants to make his statement very clear. No. No, don't act like that. It's not that he's angry. It's that he's showing you the forceful way of saying stop. Stop. That was the greatest no of no's in the universe. There are many no's in our universe. A universe is the way we exist, what we believe, what we come from, our culture, how we're brought up, what we're told. So there are many small no's. But then there's a big no. A big no. The biggest no is not the small no's. The biggest no is this mind that sees things wrongly and acts from it. This mind that sees things wrongly and acts from it is the biggest no. Why? All the neurosis and all of our sufferings and all of our karma arises from the big no. Wrong perception. Wrong perception, A. If I take care of myself, and I take care of myself only, and no matter what it costs other people, I will be happy. That's a very big no. Why? Many people today believe that. Many people believe if they're selfish, if they take care of themselves, that they're going to be happy, everyone will be happy, that will be the end to all the problems. But as a result of selfish mind, we have global warming, we have wars, conflicts. All this arises from selfish mind. Even materialism growing and deforestation and extinction of animals, pollution of the oceans, All of that is actually self-threatening. That comes back to us and threatens our own very existence. But the reason we wanted to have material growth is that we can be happy. But instead of creating happy in the pursuit of material growth, we have in fact threatened our own existence. Where did that come from? The very selfish mind that said, if I pursue my material happiness, I will be happy, then I can help other people. But it became wrong. Why? Why? Because it actually led to a bigger result, which was, yeah, we get what we want, but we destroy what everybody wants, and we're included with everybody because we're interdependent. We're totally interdependent. So therefore, what is he saying? That no was the greatest of no's. That is what? That no was the greatest no of all no's in the universe. The small no's are not compared to the big no. The big no is this mind that cherishes oneself more than others, that acts from that thought. That's the big no. If what Rinpoche is saying is that if we solve that big no, all the small no's just drop away. If we keep following the small no's, the big no will not drop away. It will increase. It will increase. Then it says here, that no showered and hailed. Showered is strong. A summer shower is very strong. We have to escape from it. We have to seek cover. And hail is even stronger. I mean, some hail is quite big. It can knock us out. So what is he saying? He temporarily knocked us out or temporarily knocked the region out by talking him no. Why? We're all like, what? But that's the way I've been taught. That's what I believed. That no created sunshine and simultaneous eclipse of the sun and the moon. Wow. Sunshine, why? When someone tells us the truth, it might be painful. But if we follow it, things become better. That is likened to a sunshine. And simultaneous eclipse of the sun and the moon, the most powerful source of light in our universe is the sun and the moon. Something that can eclipse that is something symbolic to ancient man and current man. Because no force on this earth can stop that. But in ancient times, they worshipped the eclipse as some kind of god or goddess or something moving in the heavens. So my point is, what is simultaneous eclipse of the sun? Eclipsing of the sun and moon is not particularly a good sign. It means covering of light or stopping light. So he's saying here, it created sunshine and also an eclipse. Why? It's an eclipse because it blocks out our perception that wrong view and selfishness will create happiness. So temporarily we're eclipsed, like, oh, I can't, really? Like my reality's been disturbed. At the same time, it creates sunshine. Why? Because if we realize what the big no is, things will be beautiful for us. The sun will come out. The eclipse will end. So the way he writes that is so profound because it says it's an eclipse, yet it is sunshine. Meaning if we understand selfish mind brings unhappiness, temporarily it will be very difficult for us because many of the things we do is for ourselves and we got to change. It's very difficult. It's like an eclipse. But when we realize that and we act towards that, it will be like the sunshine. Everybody loves a person who thinks about others first, without an agenda. That no was a lady's legs with nice heeled shoes. In Tibet, women don't wear heels. In Tibet, women don't show their legs. They wear boots, and it's made of animal hide. And they never take off their shoes because it's freezing. They even sleep with their shoes on in some districts. Okay, so he's using that for us. What is that? Now he's talking about the small nose, the small, small nose. That lady, that was a lady's legs with nice heeled shoes. When we look at a lady's legs in nice heeled shoes, it automatically connotates sex, sexuality, sexual gratification, or sexual invitation. We're not going to look at some football guy's legs in some heels and say, oh, that's sex. That's scary. Right? Can you imagine we put Henry Uy's foot in some heel and say, that's sexy? It's time to run. But that's our own perception. So a lady's leg in nicely heeled shoes is a no. What does that mean? We say that that brings bliss. We say that joining that lady brings bliss. We say that being with that lady brings bliss. We say that joining together brings bliss. But actually, that is deceptive. Why? The minute we join with that lady, the fights come, the disharmony comes, the kids come, then we work out the rest of our lives taking care of our kids. Maybe they grow up well. Maybe they don't grow up well. Maybe they turn out to be little treasures. Maybe they turn out to be little monsters. But once we unite with a lady, once we unite, our freedom is lost. Our whole life is dedicated to two or three individuals. Whatever we want to achieve, our dreams, all that is gone. Now we must pay the bills. We must take care of our commitments. We must pay for the car. And we use our life paying for the car, paying for the education. And at the end of life, we look at ourselves with gray hair and wrinkled skin. We say, what do we get out of that? What's the difference if I had kids or no kids? So it's deceptive. So that's using the lady's legs as a symbolism for lustful desire that drags us down into more suffering. And that's not focusing on a lady and uniting with a lady. That's a lady uniting with a man. That is two people uniting, full stop. It has nothing to do with a sexual connotation of a chauvinistic sorts. It's not a chauvinistic thing. It is telling you that sexual desire looks very pleasant and looks very nice and looks very pleasing, and it will give you a lot of gratification. But actually, it's deceptive. Because once the Hindi song is over, the Hindi movie is over, and you stop dancing around the trees, and the babies come out, that's it. The woman becomes fat. The man becomes grumpy, can have affairs, can gamble. The love that you saw, that your beautiful wife, now you tell her to shut up, she tells you to shut up. Divorce, unhappiness, kids, burden. Even if you stay together, the burden. Your whole life is spent taking care of one, two, three people. Is that the sum of your life? Is that all you can do? Is that your effort? And then you're trapped because your kids are staring at you. Whatever you want to do is finished. Your dreams are gone. Your aspirations are gone. And then you say to yourself, but I'm happy. Why? Because no one told you otherwise. Everybody around you say, if you get married, you'll be happy. If you have kids, you'll be happy. So that's deception. So when he says that no was a lady's legs with nicely heeled shoes. What is that saying? A lady's legs and a nicely heeled shoes is a connotation or symbolism for what? Enter this action and you will be happy. He's saying that's a no. Next line. That no is the best no of all. When a gentleman smiles, a good man, and that no is the beauty of the gentleman smiles is a good man. What I perceive is this is, how do men pick up women? They don't beat them over the head with a club and drag them by the hair to the cave. They smile. Some men smile at women to get the woman. And these days in our group, men smile at men to get the men. And women smile at the women to get the women. So whatever. The smile of a good man doesn't mean sexual connotation or preference. It just means how we seduce people. That if I smile at you and you like me, I promise you heaven. So you get involved with the man. People get into affairs. They get involved with married people. They get involved with people who are losers. They get involved with people who are not exactly what they portrayed themselves to be when they first got together with you. So you getting together with them, you were deceived by this good man, this smile. But actually, it was the jaws that make you lose your freedom. So you think about it. It's deceptive. That no is the beauty of the hips when you watch the gait of youths as they walk with alternating cheek rhythm. When you watch their behinds, that no is fantastic thighs, not fat or thin, but taut in their strength, lovable or leavable. Okay, there you go. Then that no is the beauty of the hips. Because in ancient scriptures, one of the ways to describe beauty is the hips must be very round and smooth for men and women. Men's shapes in a Western society is like that. Men's shape in ancient Eastern society, India, Tibet, is like this. Near almost hourglass, but not exactly. So men with soft, beautiful hips like that are considered very, very beautiful. You see, our idea of masculine beauty or masculine behavior is based a lot on television and sometimes Western influences, sometimes. So here, if you look at the bodhisattvas in the depiction of the Buddhas, sometimes you can't even tell if they're male or female. It's not they're androgynous, because their idea of beauty is very different. And enlightened beauty, the result of good actions in enlightened beauty is different than the beauty we have on this earth. Completely different. So therefore, what happens is that you're looking at the hips. The hips and the youths walking and alternating. What is they alternating? Their backside lot. Everybody got two backside what? Backside got two cheeks. So when they gait, most of us, if it's not sagging, it goes like that. If our butt's not flat, it goes like that. So if your butt's flat, if your butt's sagging, it's not going to do like that, is it? So there's nothing to look at. So here, what is it talking about? It's another reference point to how we enter lustful or negative actions due to lust. He's not talking about the lust. He's not talking about the action of sex. He's not talking about the action of copulation. He's not talking about that. He's talking about our perception of it and how it brings happiness, and that's what brings suffering. Rinpoche being married, having sex, didn't bring him suffering. He's died. His reincarnation is back in Tibet. They found him again. It said that you engage in a lot of sexual action that hurts people, that's wrong, you'll take rebirth as an animal. That's what Buddha said. But he's back in Tibet as a human. So what happens is, when you're looking at this butt gating, going up and down, gyrating up and down nicely, you know, what is it? It's another symbolism for us to be attracted. Like, oh, that should bring me happiness. If I get that butt, I'll be happy. If I can touch that butt, I'll be happy. If I can do things with that butt, I'll be happy. Then when we do things with that butt, we find out we're not happy because that butt produces more butts. That butt produces more butts, and the little butts are hungry. And then after we touch that butt doesn't get, that doesn't gyrate anymore. That butt sags and is looking for plastic surgery. So we got to make more money for that butt. So what happens is that it's deceptive, and he's using that in modern terms. See, in Tibet, you wouldn't say that. You wouldn't talk about people's butt because everybody's butt's covered. Nobody in Tibet walks around. I mean, today, I don't know. I'm talking about during Rinpoche's time. That time, people don't expose, but you know, they're in a cold country. They don't run around with Calvin Klein jeans, skin tight. Now I don't know. So you didn't see people's butts in Tibet, but he's using that in the West. Here, look, most of us wear skin tight jeans. Look at Suzanne. Everybody wearing skin tight jeans, and they got it, it gyrates up and down. If they don't got it, we don't look because it's not deceiving us at all. We take one look and say, we understand the truth. That's a no. So there are people there whose butts are flat. It doesn't gyrate, but you know, you don't have to say, but you see, but Rinpoche's a Rinpoche. Why does he say that? Ah, yeah, it's just a general example. Deception. Deception of appearance that might bring bliss. Madame Chua's looking at me like, what about my butt? Oh, don't worry. It's still happening. Now she's looking down. She's like, oh, no, I'm not asking that. But she's secretly happy. She wants to giggle. You haven't heard her giggle. I'm telling you, walk up behind her and scare her. Go, just tickle like that, with respect. She's older, you know. And then you hear her go, ah, never mind. So, it's deception. And here you go. When you watch their behinds, that Noah's fantastic thighs. They have great thighs, tout and lean. Lovable and leavable. Lovable and leavable is wonderful. It's not the Western terms, I love you and leave you. It's not that. It's not thank you, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. It's not that kind of lovable, leavable. Lovable means we're very attracted and we feel it brings us bliss. But as if we look at the true nature of it, it's something to be left. It is something to be left. Why? Because to engage in it will create tremendous amount of suffering for us. And taking away our time, taking away our energy, and drain our life. Okay? Then, that no is shoulders that turn in or expand the chest, sad or happy, without giving in to a deep sigh. That no is shoulders that turn in. That turn in. When we're sad, what happens? We do this. When we're happy, we do what? We do this. Most of us. Some people are constantly like this. Okay, so we do this and do this without giving in to a deep sigh. That no is no of all no's. That's describing the human condition. How people feel all the time. Their moods go up and down, up and down. Why do their moods go up and down? Because people don't realize the big no, wrong perception. When people don't understand the big no, their moods will go up and down, up and down. What I'm teaching you is religion here. What I'm teaching you is religious thinking on how to practice to be spiritual. I'm teaching you religion right now, incredibly. No dogmas here, meaning. Then it says here, relaxation or restraint is in question. Nobody knows that big no. Relaxation, should we relax? Should we just relax? Because people get mixed up. Everybody gets mixed up. Relaxation or restraint, there's a difference. When you've understand the big no and you don't do something, you're very relaxed about it. You don't do it because you understand. When you don't understand the big no, You're not relaxed. You're restraining. Oh, I can't do that. I can't do this. You can't do that. Monks can't have hair. All kinds of stuff. So people who are uptight, they come up with a lot of rules. Oh, you can't practice that. Oh, you can't pray to this. Oh, you can't do this. Oh, Rinpoche shouldn't be like that. Monks shouldn't be like that. Teachers shouldn't be like that. Centers shouldn't be like that. Tibetan Buddhism shouldn't be like that. Buddhism shouldn't be like that. This shouldn't be like that. They have a lot of restraints, but they're not relaxed. Why? Because their restraints do not arise from wisdom. It arises from fear. Why does it arise from fear? Because they're talking from rules and regulations, not understanding. You see people who practice Buddhism, cannot eat this, cannot do that, cannot this, cannot that. They're very uptight. They're not nice. They're not kind. They're always worried. They're always on the edge. When you go around them, you're worried like what you're doing wrong to offend them. But actually, real Buddhists who understand Buddhism well, they're very relaxed. They don't drink. They don't engage in things that damage others. They don't steal. They don't lie. And it's effortless for them. They don't ever think, oh, maybe I should just steal for once and help the center pay off the bills. Maybe I just trick them by a divination and get some money from them. They never think like that. They never ever slip. Why? They're very relaxed about it. Why are they relaxed? Because they're realized. When they're realized, they're relaxed. They're not uptight. So they can bend the rules for you. They can find different ways for you. They can make it funny. They can give you this way, that way, this way. They can make you laugh. They can make you happy. Why? They give you Dharma without you even knowing it's Dharma. They give you Dharma without even knowing that it's Dharma. It's almost like a show. Why? They're very relaxed about it. Why are they relaxed? Because they've realized it. They practice it. And it's effortless. So people, one person doesn't steal, and another person doesn't steal. One is uptight about it. You shouldn't steal, and they give you a big lecture. Do you know why I don't steal? And you're like, oh no, here we go, and then the Dharma talk again during din din. And everything they tell you, there's a lecture, there's an explanation. They tell you everything. The explanation doesn't stop. Why? Actually, they're just trying to justify and look good. They're not relaxed. They're not sure. And if you debate with them, tell them something different, they might get angry and run away, or they change their views. Why? They were never relaxed about it. So relaxed or restraint is in question, meaning it depends on the perceiver. The perceiver. Perceiver is us. So dependent on our perceiver, if we look at all of the above, the sexy lady's leg in a shoe, in the heels, the nice man's smile, the gait of the youth, if we look at all of this from the side of the perceiver, we may not want to do it, but we're not relaxed and we're uptight about it. Or we may be very, very relaxed. Look, if you get a sexy lady walking back and forth completely naked in front of a mahasiddha and completely attained like Dalai Lama, he's going to say, oh, you know, bless you. It's not going to affect him. Why? To him, it's just a naked lady. To him, it's just a naked lady. Just a naked lady. But, if you parade this naked lady back in front of maybe Joe, it will be a naked lady. So Joe's resistance to the naked lady will be, I can't, I'm a Buddhist, I can't. I don't want to get involved, I don't want to have kids. It'll be restraining. But the Dalai Lama's will be, yes? It's not that he doesn't feel it, he doesn't perceive the beautiful lady or that she's naked. It's not that. He's not stupid. It's that for him to create the karma, doesn't have the karma to create more karma to be restrained. So restraint here is from the side of the perceiver. So all of the above, that no is no of all no's. There's a lot of no's, but that's the biggest no. And that biggest no will be from the side of the perceiver, whether you are relaxed about it or you're restrained. Whether you're relaxed or restrained will depend on your realization and understanding. Everybody understand that? Quite in depth, isn't it? Nobody knows that big no. We alone know that no. Nobody knows that no, but we alone know that no. What does that mean? We live in this reality that we don't understand it. That's why we do all the things we do to create unhappiness and suffering for ourselves. We don't know that no, but that no is in us. That no in us is the natural clarity of the mind we embody, or the Buddha nature that can become a Buddha. If we don't have the Buddha nature, we cannot become a Buddha. If we cannot become a Buddha, Buddha wouldn't teach us something that we cannot develop. Because he can only teach us something that we can develop, as opposed to give to us. If Buddha was to give to us something that we don't have, then he can take away all our problems. Why? It's very logical. Some of the problems not created by me. So since Buddha cannot take away the problems, that would mean to develop Buddhahood or attainments or higher level of the mind cannot be given by a Buddha or another person, but it must be developed within. So what's the function of a Buddha? The Buddha can teach us how to get there because he has already gotten there. And hence, when we follow the Buddha's teachings, it's very systematized and logical and clear when somebody can explain these things to us, and then we listen, we say, oh yeah, and then follow, then we will get results. Why? It's been proven and tested, time-tested. Time-tested and proven. Now, nobody knows that big no means we have lived under this perception of not knowing it. Yet, we alone know that no, meaning we alone, meaning we have that potential to understand the big no. We alone know it means what? We are the only person on this planet that knows it? No. It means that we know what we are. We understand what we are. Yet we have been living under the perception of the big no. What perception? Not perceiving it, not understanding it. That no is the big sky painted with a sumi ink eternally. That big no is tattooed on our genitals. This big no is not purely freckles or a birthmark, but this big no is a real no. Sky is blue, roses are red, violets are blue, and therefore the big no is no. So what is he saying? He made it so strong that he called all the students over, and he wanted everybody to see. And when he painted it, he threw the sumi ink all over the air. Everybody got splattered. Symbolically, he's showing his anger and wrath, saying, this is really no. You can't act like this with people. You can't treat people like that. This, instead of having people respect you as a Dharma teacher, it will bring you down. It will bring the Dharma down. It will bring your attainments down. It will bring our lineage down. It will bring the practice down. It will bring everyone down. It's a big no. He wanted to make that very clear. So when the ink splattered on everybody, he's telling them symbolically, that doesn't just apply to the region, it applies to all of you. All of you. So when it paints on there, it splatters. Another meaning is that when we act out this big no, we affect other people around us without even knowing it. That our selfish mind affects others because we're all interconnected. We're not independent. We're interconnected. So he's saying that it's painted in the sky. The big sky, what does that mean? Symbolically, the big sky is Dhammadhatu. The big sky is emptiness. The big sky is the Buddha's mind. So when the big no is painted in the big sky, what is it saying? A Buddha has achieved that quality. His quality is sky-like. Completely sky-like. And then he turns around saying, it's painted in sumi ink eternally. Wow. Two levels. It's painted in calligraphy, and it's there for you to see. At the same time, it has been eternally there, even before the ink. Because this realization is within us. It's only we didn't know it. How profound, how poetic, how deep his Dharma knowledge is. Sky is blue. That's another perception. That's another no he's trying to tell us. The sky is blue. Isn't there a black sky? Isn't there a red sky? Isn't there a gray sky? Roses are red. There are blue roses. There are yellow roses. There are pink roses. There are white roses. Violets are blue. Well, dead violets aren't blue, they're brown and black. Decayed. What is it saying? Sky is blue, rose red. Sky is blue, we make that very solid. Sky is blue, my enemy is bad. Selfishness is good. Money brings me happiness. Sex is the ultimate aim of life. Eating like a pig is why I was born into the world. Having kids is the purpose of being existent. Sky is blue, roses are red. So what he's saying here is, we've made everything so firm. If I have money, I'll be happy. The sky is blue. But then there are people with no money that are happy. There are people with no kids who are happy, happier. There are people who have pursued helping others that are much happier than people who pursue themselves. So the sky is blue. There is red sky and green sky, and there's all types of skies. What is it saying? It's not fixed. Our perception is not fixed, therefore it's a no. What's a no? Our wrong perception. Roses are red. There are other color roses. It's so wonderful how you take something so primitive and basic and just gives you a meaning. Roses are red. What does that mean, roses are red? There are other color roses. So that means everything we believe in is not fixed. Roses are not necessarily red. what we have believed in our whole life is not necessarily true. So what it means is open your mind. Don't be fixed and fixated. Your fixations are the ones that create you unhappiness. That's what Rinpoche is telling you. How profound. And therefore, this big no is no. Therefore, he's reaffirming it again. Your wrong perceptions is a no. And this no is the biggest of the no's. Let us celebrate having that monumental no. What's a monument? A monument is to celebrate something. It's an edifice built to commemorate, celebrate, or remember something. So this big no, let's celebrate this big monumental no. If we raise an edifice in our mind to this no, your suffering stops. If you raise an edifice in your mind to this no, your suffering stops. How do you raise the edifice when something has happened? So when you remove this no from your mind, you can raise an edifice. An edifice is symbology of becoming a Buddha. Just think. We can have statues that look exactly like JP and pray to it and get results. Mrs. Ngao went like this to see your reaction. The monolithic no stands up and pierces heaven. Heaven is what? Heaven is the highest place in samsara where we can enjoy pleasures. There are six realms. Six realms in samsara. Six. The highest of the six realms is Akanishta heaven. Akanishta heaven is somewhere we can be reborn and be beautiful, young, fabulous, gorgeous. We never get old. Lots of food. Everything is wonderful. And we can party for thousands of years. Always, really. And then your merits run out and you take rebirth in three lower realms. That's what happens. But you can take rebirth in Akanishta heaven. Heaven in Buddhism is not a place such as in a Judeo-Christian type of thinking where you go there and just hang out at the right side of, with God for the rest of eternity. I don't know what that means. But heaven is a place exactly like Malaysia can be in heaven compared to many countries in the world. I say this with respect. I don't mean to offend any other countries. Malaysia compared to a lot of countries is heaven. I've lived there, trust me. So even better than Malaysia, there are many places we can reincarnate much, much better. So what am I saying is, when it pierces the heavens, this monolithic no, it means that even this statement is better than the gods or the deities that reside in this heaven. It's beyond their happiness and attainment. A Buddha's happiness and bliss is much greater. Therefore, the monolithic no also spreads vast as ocean. The ocean is the biggest body of a substance we have on this planet. You know, it's considered big and deep and unexplored and scary, and we don't know what's going on down there. Many places the ocean is unexplored. But this no is even greater than the ocean. Greater. No limit. It's giving you a connotation of no limits. Let us have great sunshine with this no. What is sunshine? Another symbology for awakening. Let us have great sunshine with this no. So if we stop this no of wrong perception of others, selfish mind, sunshine will arise. We will be sunshine to everyone. We will bring warmth and happiness to everyone. That's spiritual practice. Simply saying we want to help others and be nice to others is very nice and is very wonderful and is it's the kind of the catchword these days with a lot of people. But the method, nobody knows. The cause, nobody knows. And how to do it on an ultimate and complete level, not many people know. Let us have a full moon with this no. What's a full moon? Full moon is solstice, celebration. In ancient Druidic times, people celebrated the full moon. People danced around naked in the full moon. Why? It was to celebrate a solstice, to celebrate a completion, a year, harvest, something wonderful. A full moon was cooling. Nobody wants to dance around in the daytime naked with the hot sun. Skin cancer. They didn't have sunblock that time. So you dance around the full moon, you have a good time in full moon. Why? Why? It's celebration. So this no is a full moon. Why is it a full moon? Full moon represents celebration. But don't worry. If any of you achieve the big no, none of you have to dance around and under the full moon naked. I promise you. Yeah, I promise you. Relieved, Wai Ming. Wai Ming is very relieved he doesn't have to dance naked. Wai Ming is very... You lost a lot of weight, huh? Stress or diet? Oh, PB. All right. You tell him what it means afterwards without all the hypocrites lying around. Because they haven't realized the no, so we can't use that kind of language, you see. But I realized the big no, so I can use that. But actually, that's a no too, because I'm tricking myself into thinking, I've realized the big no, but actually, that's a no too. All right, now, let us have a cosmic no. What's cosmic means? Cosmic means all-pervasive. Cosmic means all-pervasive. Who has a cosmic no? A Buddha. And we can achieve that. We can achieve that. You see, in Buddhism, it doesn't tell you about a god or a deity that you worship forever and you're under them, and when they're happy, they give you things. When they're unhappy, they punish you. Because that doesn't make sense. Why are innocent people punished then? Then they say, oh, it's a lesson for us to learn. At their expense? But in Buddhism, everybody's accountable for their actions, and therefore actions get results. It explains disparity better. Much better. It helps my mind. So a cosmic no is what? A cosmic no is that this no of not having a selfish mind and this no of realizing wrong perception pervades the cosmos. That means what? It will apply to everyone, not one or two people. See, having hair can be good in some societies. In some societies, they don't consider it a beauty asset. So that's not cosmic. But this no of releasing the selfish mind is cosmic. Everywhere in any place. The cockroaches carry little no-nos, as well as the giant elephants in African jungles. Copulating no-no and waltzing no-no, guinea pig no-no. We find all the information and instructions when a mosquito buzzes. We find some kind of no-no. Wow, that is so deep. What is that saying? That covers samsara. So then he says, let us have a cosmic no. Cosmic is pervading all existence. Then he goes to the minute beings of existence by using cockroaches. Cockroaches carry a no-no. Why? Cockroaches are beings who have reincarnated due to their karma, but their remaining as cockroaches is not permanent. They will die and take rebirth as other existences. Therefore, their mind stream is temporarily hampered by their existence as a cockroach, so their perceptive abilities is much less than ours. But their potential to perceive more can be activated by a different rebirth. So therefore, cockroaches carry a no-no, meaning what? Cockroaches have the potential to become a Buddha also. They also carry the big no-no in them, meaning they have the Buddha potential. So how can a cockroach have a Buddha potential? In their current state, they cannot be a Buddha. They cannot practice correct. But they will also die and reincarnate. They will also die and reincarnate. Therefore, when they reincarnate, their karmas and their mind stream that had followed them for thousands of years, like ours, also when they're born in a correct state, can be triggered to practice and to become a Buddha. Therefore, cockroaches have that potential, similarly as wild elephants or giant elephants in the African jungles. So even something great like an elephant has the potential to become a fully happy being to benefit others. Why is that? Again, what I explained in the cockroach situations. Scenario. So copulating no-no means, now he's talking about different activities. Copulating and waltzing. The way he does it, it's totally opposite. Copulating, as you guys all know, that's two people naked and sharing genitals. That's all? Nobody laughs louder? I thought I'd be a little, say things that are no-no and get a better reaction. No. Ruby's looking at me like this. She hasn't had it in a while, poor thing. All right. Paris had a big smile, but not since she's moved back from Burma. Now, rude. And with this fare, you don't need it. More fares. It's a high that you it's like after it's all done, you're kind of like, oh, now back to my boring, dreary life. Meetings in KMP, go home, and you know. You want more fares, don't you? Wasn't it cool? That's right. We should have one every week. JP's like, thank God I don't have it every week. Thank God I have to work in that miserable hotel. And I still can't pay off my loan. Just kidding. JP's red is because he ate a tomato. You know why I like teasing JP? He's very arrogant looking. But deep down inside, he's very soft. Highly intelligent. I'm not complimenting. Highly intelligent. And deep down inside, I've noticed something about him in these few weeks. He cares about his friends. What he has good, he wants to share with them. Something from a previous life. So I keep him nearby, and I kind of give him dharma and put him in different positions to develop that quality in him even stronger. So he's put his head at the VPC, not because we want to fleece him of his money that he doesn't have, a big no. No, because he has that potential to help. It's just that we got to get it out. You're saying everybody does. Yeah, but he really cares about his friend. I've been talking to him. Sometimes I chat with him. Sometimes I get online, I have to put myself offline, or as JP goes, hi, Lumba G! I'm like, oh, God. There's a few freaks that always get online that try to say hello to me, and I put them offline. Henry's looking at JJ. So I was trying not to tell you it's JJ, but it's Henry's fault because he looked at him. What are you, Vajrayogini? She's cute too. Yeah, and we have a lot of people like JP, quite a lot, that sincerely care, and they want to help, they don't know how, and they try their best, and they try all kinds of things, but they actually want to bring spiritual practice to others. I feel that. There's a lot of people like that. And that's wonderful. Why, that's some imprint from a previous life. That doesn't mean he doesn't have 24,000 problems and all kinds of difficulties that he's encountering, but he's still here. So what happens is, copulating, no means what? Even while we're copulating and waltzing here covers eating, sleeping, the whole spectrum of activities that we actually do. So don't focus on copulation and waltzing. It's covering the whole spectrum of activities that we are totally engaged in all day long. So while we're engaging in all these activities, what Rinpoche is saying is the inherent no is still in us. Meaning what? We still are able to achieve the big no. We can still become a Buddha. So what is he saying? Stop saying to yourself, you cannot. Stop saying to yourself, you're a bad person. Stop saying to yourself, you can't achieve. Stop saying to yourself that I don't know if I can do it. Why? Why? Because this potential in us is ever present if we tap into it. Believe the Dharma, believe your Guru, believe what the Buddha says. Do not put yourself down by saying you can't do it. Why? Why? That's an obstacle you create for yourself. And by believing you cannot achieve, this is what happens, my friends. We have many types of karma stored away from previous lives and this life from doing a lot of merit. These karmas that we have stored away, if we always say no, we open up the karma that becomes no. If we say yes, we open up the karma that becomes yes. So if we always say yes, I can, and we push ourselves, we do it, we can achieve it because we will open up that karma that will help us to achieve it. And then this life, we've done a lot of offerings and prayers and donations and work and meditations and traveling and pilgrimage and Dharma work. We've done a lot. So that, you think that's wasted? It's not wasted. But how do you open it up? By saying, I can do it. By saying, I can do it. And by pushing yourself to achieve it. And by saying you can do it, you may fall and fail and fall flat on your face and fail a few times. That's all right. That doesn't mean you haven't achieved it. It means you're on the road to achieving it. What road doesn't have any obstacles that you don't fall? So we have many types of karma in us. And that's where the guru comes in. The guru is someone that is supposed to be able to see past you and what you can see in yourselves. So when the guru gives you an assignment and you always say, no, I don't have time, then how does the guru help you and open up your potential?
I need to find myself, so I'll come back to you in 10 years.
So the guru just goes, oh. But you've been with me for 10 years.
I need another 10 years.
Okay, I'll dig you out of the grave when you're ready. I mean, what else can the guru say? Dig you out. So when the guru gives you something, oh, you should do this committee, you should do this work.
But I can't, I don't feel I'm good enough. Nobody respects me.
You got that right. But they will start if you start applying yourself.
But I don't have time because I have to have sex 24 hours a day.
Because they just found a new girlfriend. So wherever the girlfriend walks, they're staring at her like, they can't let go. They got to hold her, rub her, touch her, do everything. Even they were praying, excuse me, but let me touch my girlfriend. They just can't let go.
But I don't have any money. When I have money, I'll do more Dharma practice.
Hello, all the monks in Gondin don't have money. They're becoming Buddhas. Hello. All the monks in Thailand don't have money. So they're doing Dharma. No money. All these nasty excuses.
But you know, I need to find myself. I need to go out and have a drink and meet my friends.
Wow. All these tired, nasty excuses. And some of you come back and say,
Rinpoche, I heard something about you and I want to make it clear. Is it true or not?
Suddenly, you know, the lights, the spotlights on me, and I'm in the police booth, and I'm like, and there's a see-through mirrors, and I'm being questioned. Who am I? Am I real? And oh dear, all these kind of ridiculous things.
But remember, I can't stay up late because I get tired.
You're very tired. I mean, come on, you've stayed up late for so many things in your life. The first time you went to look for your girlfriend or boyfriend, you stayed up all day, all night by their window looking for them with flowers, hoping that they'll look at you. Hello! You stayed up the whole night with your girlfriend on wedding night and you did boobly 3-4 times. You weren't tired. Then when you met your boyfriend the first time, you spent hours getting ready. Hours! And even after getting ready, you looked like you weren't ready still. Hello! You can hang out in karaoke the whole night singing and making people crazy and drinking tired drinks and making yourself throw up on people. And you're not tired? Why is it when it comes to Dharma to learning something good?
I'm too tired. I have to get up early tomorrow.
Yeah. You can fly from here to China, to Hong Kong, to America, to England to do business deal. You're up the whole night. You're like this buzz on an airplane because you're insomniac. You know? And then when you come to the meeting, you can make it what? You can make it. Why can you make it? Why can you make it to the meetings? Why? Because you find there's value in it. That's why. You find value in it. So in Dharma, you don't find value. It's not you don't find value. You don't know the value of Dharma yet. Once you know the value of Dharma, it will be different. And all these tired excuses will go away. Many of it. So what happens is, copulating, no. Waltzing, no. Guinea pig, no. He's covering all of samsara, all activities. So it means in all activities that you do, the no is inherent in you, meaning you can still achieve it. So don't put yourself down. Don't be deceived by your activities. Don't think that if you do a certain activity, you cannot achieve enlightenment. You can. So he's saying sex is not dirty. Eating is not dirty. Dancing is not dirty. Making money is not dirty. Having a family is not dirty. Having entertainment, having fun is not dirty. A guinea pig is not dirty. He's telling you all of it's not dirty. But what he's saying is dirty is this, is just resting on your laurels in that and not doing anything else. That's what's dirty. You have to eat. No matter if you're the highest lama in the world, you got to eat. Or you're a nobody like me, you've got to eat. You've got to sit on your throne in the morning and let it all out. You got to pee. You've got to do all this. So it doesn't tell you you're high or low. What it's saying is these activities are not the issue. The issue is you being stuck in these activities and saying, oh, that's it. That's wonderful. There's nothing else. That's the issue. Right? So we find all the information instructions when a mosquito buzzes. When all the information instructions when a mosquito buzzes, what does it mean? All information. When a mosquito buzzes. Sound. Sound is created by life. Life in Tibetan we call kangsa. Kangsa means consciousness. It has consciousness. Although temporarily in the form of mosquito, its consciousness cannot manifest as strongly as ours. It has consciousness. For example, our consciousness will not be as strong as the gods or the demigods. Those consciousnesses are much stronger in those higher states of existence. So therefore, it has consciousness. Consciousness tells you everything. It gives you all instructions and all information, meaning what? Even in something minute like that, the ultimate no is very strong. It exists. It's inherent. So it gives you all information with its buzzes. It gives you all information. It means everything minute, from the smallest being to the most supreme being, unenlightened that is, has the inherent ability to achieve Buddhahood. Although temporarily in their state they cannot, but they can. So nobody gets put down. All things is to be respected. Then we find some kind of no-no. We find some kind of no-no. Let our no-no be the greatest motto. What is the greatest motto? That's the rule we should live by. A motto is something that a principle we live by. The principle of not living by wrong perception. Money doesn't make us happy. Killing enemies doesn't make us happy. Disrespecting our parents doesn't make us happy. Breaking the law doesn't make us happy. All these things don't make us happy. Pursuing negative samsaric pursuits doesn't make us happy. Doesn't make us happy. So what does it say here? No for the king. That's saying for someone high like a king. No for the prime minister. That is talking about Tenzin Ossel himself, the regent, and also everyone in any position. No for the worms of our subjects, meaning all sentient beings and everybody in that organization also. It's a no-no. Let us celebrate the no-no so that Presbyterian preachers can have speech impediments in proclaiming the no-no. It applies to everyone. Anyone and everyone. See, Presbyterian preacher is just a label we have put on someone. It's just a label. Let our horses neigh no-no, let the Vajrasanga fart no-no. Vajrasanga means what? Sangha is someone who's ordained or someone who's achieved or attained. So someone who's achieved and attained or ordained usually has very good manners. They don't fart in public. A Vajra fart is what? It's believed that highly realized beings, whatever sound, whatever actions, whatever they do, benefits people around them. So a Vajra fart is potential benefit for someone. Why? A Sangha doesn't fart. When he farts, it's a Vajra fart. Why? He breaks your concept of how things should be. A Vajra Sangha or an enlightened teacher or an attained teacher is giving you a message by his fart. Oh, you say, but you're not supposed to fart. How can a teacher fart? How rude. Imagine Rinpoche walks by, thinking. So the very fact that you go, oh, he shouldn't do that, again, you're stuck on perceptions, preconceptions of how you think it should be. That's what he's breaking. So if he's so attained and so high, he can do that. Nothing happens to him. So what is it? Sending a message to you? Stop putting him in a box. Stop putting enlightenment in a box. So next time Rinpoche walks by, go, thank you. Okay, now, giant no-no that made a great imprint on the coffee table. Then he ends the whole poem back to the coffee table. He brings it out to the universe. He encompasses all beings in samsara. Then he brings it back again to something as simple as a dent in a coffee table. The power of his poem.